Brandi Cruz coming up today on Undivided. You already know it's expensive to live in Washington State, but now it's also expensive to die here. Plus, join us on Saturday to stand up for girls' sports and common sense. Also, more nonsense from the state's Domestic Violent Extremism Task Force. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month. Help support the work we do. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com, and click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. This weekend, we get to decide, do we let the activists scare us out of doing what we know is right, or do we stand up for ourselves? Do regular people stand up for themselves, stand up for common sense, and say, you know, we're not going to be intimidated by you anymore? Of course, we've been talking about what's happening around the two new Let's Go Washington initiatives, the harassment, the threats, the violence, the destruction of lawful signatures in an effort to protect girl sports and to help restore parental rights in the state of Washington. Two moderate initiatives. Two initiatives that are in regard to issues that, if people aren't lied to about them, will have overwhelming support, even in a deep blue state like Washington. But the people who are pushing radical gender ideology, they don't want you to have a choice. They don't want you to have a decision. They don't want an initiative to go to the legislature, or God forbid, to go to the voters to keep boys out of girls' sports, because they know it'll pass. They don't want the legislature to be faced with another choice about whether to protect parental rights in schools, because they know it's more likely that this time it will stick. So what do, of course? Well, they resort to their same old tired tactics, and they try to label you as a bigot and a transphobe, and they assault you, and they threaten you, and they harass you, and they shame you, and hell, they'll even call 911 on you if they deem your opinions too extreme.
I'm feeling very threatened.
Okay, so what is happening exactly right now that's making you feel threatened? What are they doing?
At the moment, nobody's doing anything except for signing a petition. They're taking a very strong political stance that's very divisive, and it's causing people to feel very threatened and uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's a guy named Tex Page. Yes, that's his real name, Tex Page, who was so triggered by a booth at a local Fred Meyer that was giving people an opportunity, if they wished, to sign one of these initiatives, that he felt compelled to ask for an armed police response because he felt threatened. So the question I have for you today is, do we let people like Tex Page win, or do we fight back? I know what I'm going to do, obviously. So we need your support this Saturday. This Saturday at noon, we're going into the belly of the beast, the South Sound, and we're going to have a signature gathering event and a rally at Tumwater Middle School. And yes, the location is very intentional, because we know in the South Sound, especially in the Olympia area, this is where they are tried and true radical gender ideology by any means necessary. This is also an area of the state where signature gatherers have endured these threats and this harassment. And I'll tell you this, I know that there are teen girls who want to come out and want to stand up for themselves, who want to say, letting boys play against us is not fair. But I'll also tell you this, in conversations with them and their parents, they are very afraid. They are very afraid of doing something that's lawful and that is part of the democratic process. Imagine that. Teen girls afraid to go out and gather signatures in their community to protect fair play in the sport that they love. So we need you to be there on Saturday. Again, the details, noon on Saturday, Tumwater Middle School. We want you to come if you haven't signed one of these initiatives or both of the initiatives, and sign them. And I am talking to dads specifically, to men who are more manly than Tex Page, the kind of men who wouldn't call 911 because someone's collecting signatures on an issue they disagree with. We need you to show up for these girls, okay? That's my ask of you. I feel like I don't ask you very much. This is my ask of you, to be in Tumwater at the middle school at noon on Saturday and to stand up for these girls, for girls' sports, and also to stand up for your rights as a parent and show that we're not going to allow the unhinged activists to win. And you better believe that they're planning to be there. You better believe that the unhinged activists who've been threatening, harassing, assaulting, ripping up, throwing away, calling 911 are going to be there in Tumwater on Saturday. They're already all over Reddit. First of all, they're trying to get the school to block our application for a permit to be able to use the facility, saying Tumwater School District renting out space to a bunch of bigots this Saturday, encouraging people to call the district and to complain, encouraging people to file an equal opportunity and non-discrimination complaint, encouraging people to file a civil rights complaint, encouraging people to call their state lawmakers and rally the troops to come out to Tumwater, where all we're trying to do is protect girls' sports and parental rights. So I know that the activists are going to be there. My question is, are you going to be there? I'm going to be there. I think there are probably some teenage girls who want to be there, but who are understandably very afraid. And if it takes a literal wall of dads to be there to make them feel safe, then that's what we need to do. I need a literal wall of dads to block teen girls from the radical gender ideology crowd that has shown that they have a propensity for violence when confronted with words and ideas that they don't agree with. So can you do that for me, dads? And hell, I'm not ruling out a mom and her ability to protect kids. So moms too. But I'm telling you what, I need some big burly dads who are more manly than Tex Page to come out and show their solidarity. So we'll be talking about this more on Thursday, but Tumwater Middle School, noon on, it is Thursday. We'll be talking about it all over social media from now until Saturday. I have lost track of my days after my foray 48 hours that disappeared when I was in Portland. Tumwater Middle School, noon on Saturday. And we'll see what the school decides to do. Will the school reject our permit? Probably. I don't think they have a legal basis to do so, but one way or the other, we will be at Tumwater Middle School on Saturday, whether it's inside or outside. So we need you to be there too. All right, top story of the day. No, that wasn't our top story. It was just me begging you to finally stand up for common sense and go out into our communities and do that like the crazy activists do. So yesterday, about $12.5 billion in new taxes and fees was thrust upon Washingtonians, courtesy of Washington Governor Bob Ferguson, who campaigned saying, we need to spend smarter, we need to budget better, and then signed the largest tax increase in state history into law. So we had a lot to talk about on the show yesterday. So I promised we'd come on the show today and go through what all these new taxes look like, who they most impact. So I'm going to do that in detail for you. And I'll push out some of these graphics so you can share them with your friends and neighbors and let them know why life just got a lot more expensive for the average Washingtonian and for business owners. And mind you, this isn't even a comprehensive list. $1.6 billion in property tax increases, $3.9 billion in sales tax increases, $5.6 billion in business and occupation tax increases, $637 million in a combined increase between capital gains and the death tax, $281 million for that new Tesla tax designed to punish Elon Musk for the crime of supporting Donald Trump, $170 million for a new tax on storage units, plus some other individualized taxes toward certain entities, a 50% increase in the Discover Pass fee, a 30% increase in hunting and fishing licenses. All of this is, of course, on top of the 6 cent per gallon gas tax increase that already took effect over the summer. These are just the ones, some of the ones, not even a comprehensive list, that took effect yesterday, October 1st. Of course, none of us can afford new taxes. And look, if the state was in some sort of massive crisis, like an economic downturn, then maybe I'd feel differently. I probably wouldn't. But, you know, you couldn't chalk it up to mismanagement. But we're not in an economic downturn. And when all of this, the spending spree started by Democrats, we were having an economic renaissance around tech, especially. And Republicans warned them in 2019, hey, you know, I know things are great economically, but it might not always be that way. And maybe we shouldn't be spending every single cent that we come in on these brand new things we come up with, like laser hair removal for transgender inmates. So that long list, a lot of them are bad, obviously. All of them are bad, are going to make life more expensive for the working class and for businesses, big and small. But upon reflecting on the list a little bit more, there's one in particular that I want to talk about that I think shows the poison nature of Washington state government and their obsession with taxes. And that is the death tax. The concept of a death tax is utterly insane. All those other taxes I mentioned, you have an opportunity to not be subjected to them if you don't want to be. You can find creative ways around, you know, not owning property, not going to shop at stores, living off the grid, something like that. But a death tax? Well, you can't avoid death. Death catches up with all of us eventually. And the Washington State Democrats are so greedy that even when you're in your grave, they're still taking your money from you. So here's the increase in the death tax. And these aren't all of the brackets because there's like 10 and I didn't want to do them all, but I gave you an idea of how it's graduated. So if you die and you've got $0 to $1 million worth of taxable assets, the government's going to take 10% of it. And frankly, for anyone who owns a home, like it's really not that hard in a state like Washington to die with $1 million in assets. And even if you die with, I don't know, $300,000 in assets, it's $0 to $1 million, they're still taking some of your money. $2 million to $3 million, they're going to take 17% of everything you've worked hard for your entire life, everything you want to pass on to your kids so they can pass on to their kids, 17%. $4 million to $6 million, 23%. And then if you are someone who has worked hard their entire life and who dies in the state of Washington with over $9 million in assets, the Democrats are going to take 35% of that from you while you're being lowered into the grave. 35% of everything you have worked hard for to pass along to the next generation. And the state of Washington, in their greed and mismanagement of funds, in their radical ideology that the government needs to provide basically every single possible thing that a living, breathing human being needs in life, they're going to take that money from you and they're going to send it out to their cronies and allies and they're going to waste it and it's going to get lost in the homeless industrial complex, never to fix anything at all. They're going to spend it on Governor Bob Ferguson's brand new task force to help illegal immigrants get everything they need while they're in the state of Washington. They're going to spend it on boob jobs and laser hair removal for transgender inmates. Everything you worked hard for your entire life, you die, they take some of that money and they use it to give a trans inmate a boob job. I mean, that sounds crazy, but actually true. The death tax should be illegal. The death tax should absolutely be illegal because you don't have a choice but to pay it. But the broader picture here and why the death tax, in addition to just being unfathomable and theft, it's just government theft. The other part of it that's problematic for our state, if we're supposed to believe that we're in this budget crisis that's out of the state's control, is that not every other state has a death tax. So now people have a choice. They can decide, do I die with all of my assets in the state of Washington, or do I die somewhere else? What a crazy choice. You have to decide, where do I die so the government doesn't take a third of everything I've earned from my family and my kids? So now people have a choice. And if you're in that $9 million bracket where you die and you've got more than $9 million in assets, what do you think the choice is that they're going to make? Die here or let the government take 35% and let the government take 35% of everything I've earned or die somewhere else. They're going to die somewhere else. They're going to die somewhere else. So what does that mean? That means that in their golden years, when they're retired, they're going to pick up and they're going to move to another state where the death tax isn't as high or doesn't exist. And so what are they going to take with them? Every single cent that they would have otherwise paid into our system in the gas tax, in the property taxes that they were paying, in the sales tax for when they were shopping within our state and in our cities. So now, not only are you not going to get taxes from them at death, but you're not going to get any money from them while they live. And what do you think that that's going to do to our economy? And the same is true for the capital gains tax. They said, we're going to tax the rich so they pay their fair share. Well, now what are they paying? Nothing. Because the rich take their assets and go somewhere else, like Jeff Bezos, who's now living in beautiful Florida, where the government doesn't believe it's entitled to the money that he earned. So then we get into a sick cycle. They pass a tax, it targets a certain group of people. They say, we need this money because we're in a budget hole. That certain group of people says, screw you, kick rocks. They move somewhere else. So now all that money they had planned, the revenue they had planned for that was going to come in, that was going to pay for their pet projects and help fill the budget deficit, well, poof, it's gone. Well, they're not going to cut the budget. What are they going to do? They're going to come to you for it. They're going to find other ways to get it. So now they've run out of ways to tax the rich and people who can easily move from place to place because they have the financial ability to do so. And it's going to fall on the backs of the people who don't have the financial ability to do so. It's going to fall on the backs of the poor and the working class because they're never going to cut the budget. And if you don't believe me, I was chatting with our friend Zach Abraham because we tape Swamp Watch every week. We just taped it yesterday. And I brought up this death tax issue with him. And look, Zach has done very well with his life. He grew up. He was not raised with money, did not have money, built Bulwark Capital. Now he has a lot of money, and he'll be damned if he dies here and allows Bob Ferguson and the Democrats to put their grubby hands on it.
If I was ever going to sell Bulwark, I've had several people want to buy it. I have no plans to ever want to sell it, but you know, things change. I will just tell you exactly what I would do. Okay. I would change my state that I live in. I would buy another, I'd go out there and I would buy another house, $1 million house, whatever. Right. And I would move the state that I live in, change my state of residence. And then I would sell the house. My tax savings would more than double what I paid for the house. So I would have the state of Washington effectively purchase me a house on their dime. And they would not get a dime of the sale of Bulwark. Not a dime.
Yep.
And I will ensure that that occurs now out of spite.
Out of spite. And I don't blame him. If I worked that hard to build a business from nothing, made smart financial decisions, have children... I ain't dying in a place that's going to take 35% of my wealth. And I'll tell you what, Mike and I aren't either. Now, I don't have $9 million in assets. Maybe one day. But I don't care how much assets I have. We will find a way not to pay the death tax. And frankly, you should too. And so when they start to collect less tax revenue, as they're going to, businesses go out of business. Now they're not paying the B&O tax. Now they're not collecting sales tax revenues. So now we're going to be in an even worse financial situation, and they're going to come back to you for more money. You for more money, not the rich and all this. They're going to come to you for more money, and they're going to try to justify it. And your job is to say no. Your job is not to vote for the people who think that they can just tax you out of house and home. We're going to talk more about that in a moment, because the media plays a big role in holding Democrats accountable for this and trying to warn the public about what the result of this will all be. So we'll talk about that next in our segment, Seattle Times is Trash. First, a reminder to join me at the Engage Conference at the Meydenbauer Center in Bellevue, October 22nd and 23rd. I'm going to be talking about housing policy with my friend Jonathan Cho. I'm sure we'll get off the rails and talk about other things as well, as we typically do when we're together. And if you are a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, again, another one of those things that's been absolutely overregulated by the government, hard to even make a profit, but our friends at the Rental Housing Association, RHAWA.org, can have your back. So make sure you become a member of RHA today, RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org. It's about $260 a year, and they can help you navigate all the crazy policies, laws, regulations for landlords in the state of Washington, RHAWA.org. All right, the Seattle Times editorial board occasionally comes out with an anti-tax, shame on Democrats editorial. The problem is that for the vast majority of the time, they support the exact same politicians who've put us in that situation. Let's talk about it in our segment. The Seattle Times is Trash. All right, this is the latest editorial from the Seattle Times, as all the new taxes took effect yesterday, focused specifically on the business and occupation tax and the sales tax increases. Hastily passed tax will haunt Washington lawmakers. And you see that on the headline and you think, well, I think, will it though? Will it haunt Washington lawmakers? And on its face, you might say, oh, wow, good for the Seattle Times being critical of the tax that was hastily passed and not really considering the consequences. But of course, we all know the history of the Seattle Times editorial board, which we'll get to in a moment. But let's read a little bit of what they had to say. It says 9 days. That's how long Democratic lawmakers in Olympia took to pass a sweeping expansion of sales taxes estimated to impact more than 90,000 businesses in Washington. Hurrying to approve a multi-pronged tax on many services was a reckless way to craft foundational economic policy. The tax, expected to raise almost $2.7 billion over the next 4 years, takes effect on Wednesday. So this is right before October 1st. Ruling Democrats bemoaned a runaway budget this past session, one they said required a bevy of tax increases. But this obfuscated the truth. State tax revenues had been increasing, just not enough to cover all their spending priorities. So they solved this political quandary with taxes, whose deep economic impacts many lawmakers failed to consider. They go on to say the result isn't pennies across the economy. They are broad hacks into many small businesses' bottom line. Take DigiBuy Consulting, an IT company of 15 employees based in Sammamish. The company's prices just went up 10% overnight, amounting to about $10,000 apiece for many customers. They said, I don't think the legislature realized how much this is going to hurt small businesses. Oh, that's where you're wrong, Lee Dirks of DigiBuy Consulting. They absolutely knew what it was going to do to many small businesses. They just didn't care. And media outlets like our friends at the Seattle Times didn't give a damn either. And they have not given a damn while Democrats have engaged in runaway spending that was heading towards this obvious conclusion for years. The Seattle Times editorial board goes on to write, increasingly evident is the fact that the legislature's reliance on taxes this year will make choices next year far harder. That's when lawmakers will deal with real crises. The Trump administration's escalating tariffs will cost Washington an estimated $2.2 billion over the next 4 years. Federal budget cuts will cause further financial pain. Other state troubles, including a surge in payouts of tort claims and lawsuits, will add on to about about a $1 billion shortfall. This in a state with an already sky-high cost of living. And then they quote State Rep. April Berg, a Democrat from Mill Creek and chair of the House Finance Committee, who said recently at an Association of Washington Business Forum in Spokane, quote, looking at the kitchen table is where we all should be focused. The Seattle Times concludes, if only lawmakers had done that earlier this year. Look, on its face, I'm glad that they're calling Democrats to task for saying one thing and doing another, for passing hastily conceived taxes that will ultimately have a devastating impact on the economy at a time when we know that the Trump administration is threatening to withhold federal funding from states like Washington. But what, of course, is the fundamental problem with the Seattle Times? They're full of shit. They have endorsed the very politicians for office who continue year after year to vote yes on tax increases. They endorsed Bob Ferguson for governor, despite the fact that he had a lifelong career of tax increases and runaway spending. He raised taxes by $1 billion when he was on the King County Council in the early 2000s. He doubled the size of the Attorney General's office while he was there for 12 years. They endorse him for governor, and within a matter of 3 months, he signed the largest tax increase in state history into law. Who do you believe the Seattle Times editorial board will endorse for governor 3 years from now? Bob Ferguson, if he runs again. Doesn't matter who's running against him. There was a business-friendly candidate who was also a Democrat, because Lord knows the Seattle Times would never endorse a Republican for governor. Mark Mullett, a tried-and-true pro-business Democrat who was running against Bob Ferguson. They still endorsed Bob Ferguson. And yes, unfortunately, their endorsement matters. And they endorsed Bob Ferguson because they knew that he was probably going to win and they wanted to be on his good side. So they can write as much as they want about Democrats in Olympia and how, oh my gosh, they've never met a tax they didn't like and they're going to devastate our economy, but what are they going to do the next major election? They're going to endorse all of the Democrats who have voted to devastate our economy. And they'll be good, obedient little boys and girls the next time there's a gubernatorial election, and they will once again endorse Bob Ferguson. Because ideological purity to them means more than the success of the state and the success of the city that they're supposed to serve and the success of its citizens. Now, occasionally, only occasionally, they'll throw out an endorsement here and there for a Republican where they think it's safe. They endorse Chad Magandans for state Senate, a Republican. They think that's safe for them. So they can go back and say, oh no, we don't just endorse Democrats. But all of the things they complain about, they have no standing to do so, because you cannot claim to be upset about the position the state is in while you have 99% of the time fall in line with the party that got us there. And that is why the Seattle Times is trash. All right, coming up next, more nonsense from Washington's Domestic Extremism and Mass Violence Task Force. They can't even define domestic extremism, so not really a good place to start as it is. And as we know, they completely ignore left-wing violence in all its forms. We'll talk about that first. This is the perfect time of year to check in on the health of your roof. The last thing you want is to be into October, have a leak in your roof, and be like, oh my gosh, I waited too long. I knew it was on its last legs, but I didn't do anything about it. So call Valentine Roofing today, 206-ROOFING, 206-ROOFING. They'll do a couple things. First, if you're not sure if your roof can survive another season, don't wait until the heavy rain hits. Just call Valentine. They'll give you a free roof assessment. And here's the best part. If they can patch up your roof and fix it, they're going to do that. They're not going to pressure you into buying a new roof until you really need one. But if you do need a new roof, they can come in. They can do a leak stoppage if necessary until they're able to come in and safely install a new roof. And it's really great. They offer zero down financing for most projects. You can get the work done now, pay over time. And Valentine does more than just roofing. If you need new siding, gutters, attic insulation, exterior cleaning, you can expect the same great service. So schedule your free estimate by calling 206-ROOFING. Again, call 206-ROOFING, and please tell them you heard about them on Undivided with me, Brandi Cruz. They'll take good care of you. To be honest, they'll take good care of you either way, but it doesn't hurt to tell them that I sent you. All right. We know that Washington State has its farce of a domestic violent extremism task force that is doing nothing except highlighting non-existent right-wing extremism. For some reason, it's still going on. Not only is it still going on, the Attorney General's office wants to give it more money. Let's talk about it in our segment. Unbelievable. All right, so the task force convened again last week. This time, the topic of their meeting was defining domestic violent extremism, which I feel like kind of should have been done before they created the task force in the first place, don't you think? Hey, we're creating a domestic violent extremism task force. Maybe we should have a definition for domestic violent extremism before we spend millions of dollars on it and create a task force under state law. I don't know. But 9 months into it, they're still trying to find a definition for the task force that they're serving on. Right now, their website says there's no universally agreed upon definition of domestic extremism, and the term is undefined in the revised Code of Washington. Okay, so a couple of things I want to talk about here, because a lot of the meeting obviously focused around this conversation. Now, one of the members of the task force is Walla Walla County Sheriff Mark Kreider, and he chimed in, and I'll give him credit, because he tried to explain to the group that the way in which they were going about trying to define domestic violent extremism was the wrong way to do it entirely.
I think that one of the things that hopefully we've identified that it's extremely difficult to define extremism because everybody has a completely different opinion and viewpoint of what is extreme views. You know, we can look at just the abortion issue. The both sides of the abortion issue would be considered extremists by the opposite side. So I think the premise of trying to fix a domestic extremism problem in the state is problematic. In my opinion, there's no way that we can define domestic extremism and come to a resolution on what is the extremism.
Correct. I agree with him. Not if you're trying to do what this task force is doing and define domestic extremism under the umbrella of the views that people hold, rather than the actions they take in pursuit of pushing their views. So what he rightly noticed from this absolute ideologically loony lefty comprised task force is that they were trying to define domestic violent extremism through the lens of what views people hold, not through the lens of the actions that they engage in the pursuit of a political, religious, or social agenda. And so thank God for the sheriff in saying, we can't characterize views as domestic extremism. And that's what they're trying to do. Oh, the right wing, you know, the Moms for Liberty and the anti-abortion crowd. He's like, that is a slippery slope. And it's obviously going to be one-sided because you're going to characterize people as domestic extremists who don't support, you know, boys and girls sports, who support parental rights. Those are going to become domestic extremists under the eyes of the state of Washington and the revised code. He says you can't do that because people can hold views you don't agree with, but that doesn't mean they're breaking the law and it doesn't mean they're engaged in extremism. He said it's the actions, it's the acts, it's the assaults. And the fact that he even has to explain that to them is genuinely scary. And it's why the Domestic Violent Extremism Task Force shouldn't exist. Because all it is serving to do, and really their mission is, to label conservatives as domestic extremists and to put you on a watch list. That's why they've got the bias crimes hotline, the hate crimes hotline, and all of that. This is all about is a taxpayer-funded witch hunt to go after conservatives for wrongthink. And the sheriff is pointing that out. He's doing it in a very, you know, calm, eloquent way. But I understand the underlying message of what he was trying to say to these crazy people. I don't even know how he's on this task force to begin with. Because these people want to say domestic violent extremism is basically people who hold right-wing views, not someone who might hold a political or social view or religious view and then, in pursuit of pushing that view, commits a crime. That's really all it is. The definition is very simple. Is people who commit a crime in the pursuit of a political, social, or religious agenda. It is really not that hard to define. But then they're scared because they don't want to label their own side domestic extremists, because to them, violence or vandalism in the pursuit of a progressive idea or a socialist idea isn't domestic extremism. It's justice. It's wild. So there are a couple people saying here and there on the task force who I think are aware of some of the pushback that we and others have been giving to the task force because it gets so much attention from the right for obvious reasons. And this cracked me up. So there's a woman, Cynthia Miller Idris, who's a polarization and extremism research innovation lab expert. Okay. And she gets on, and you'll hear her reference it at the end, but she kind of is trying to remind the group that, hey, people watch these meetings. Like, you know, these meetings are public, right? And I think she understands that the extremism task force has been criticized for just ignoring left-wing extremism altogether in favor of non-existent right-wing extremism. And I think she realized that that would look really bad to do it at this meeting in light of like the Charlie Kirk assassination and some other very public cases of left-wing violence. Here's what she said.
Folks may have questions about the recent assassination attempt or the ICE attack that happened, or if you haven't seen it, the new CSIS report that's out today about trends in left-wing violence. We can have that conversation. We can have a conversation just in general about the public health approach, what we're seeing, or not. Just if there are questions, and we are on the record in this task force meeting, and so that's something to remember.
See what she's doing? I mean, God bless her. She's like, hey, people are watching. Maybe, I don't know, since we're a domestic extremism task force, I don't know, bring up the single most relevant political assassination in our nation's history, maybe besides MLK Jr. that just happened like a couple weeks ago. I don't know, maybe bring up the shooting at the ICE facility, guys. People are watching, people are watching. So do you think the room listened? Of course not. Of course they didn't listen. We can't do that. We can't talk about the Charlie Kirk assassination because there are so many more pressing instances of domestic extremism that need our attention, like ICE agents refusing to show their faces. I kid you not. So she's basically telling them, you guys, people are watching. We have to talk about one of these major instances of left-wing extremism. They're like, no, we want to talk about federal agents hiding their faces from the public. Here's a clip.
It is terrible practice for public officials when we're not talking about a COVID situation to mask themselves in order to, make sure their identity is unknown. But right now, the law, there is no law, at least no federal law, that prohibits it. I do think there are some good constitutional arguments that public officials should, you know, should not be masked. The counter to that, which unfortunately with things like the attack on the ICE facility in Dallas just a couple of days ago, are adding fodder to arguments that DHS is making that their agents are, you know, have an 1,000% increase in threats against them and that it's important for them to mask their identities because they get doxxed and so on and so forth. My own view is when you become a law enforcement officer, this is part of what you accept, that you know, you should comport your behavior in a way that the public finds confidence in, and then you will not have a need to mask yourself.
Did you catch that? She's blaming them. It's ICE agents' fault that they're being shot at and attacked. And if they didn't do what they were doing, they wouldn't have to wear a mask in the first place. And she brings up the shooting at the ICE facility, but only brings it up as a way to say that it gave the Trump administration fodder for their claims that ICE agents need to be masked because they're under attack. This is a task force designed to take a serious look at the problem of domestic violent extremism. And they are more interested in talking about how problematic it is that ICE agents are masking their faces because of threats of violence and doxing, then they want to talk about, they're more interested in that than talking about the Charlie Kirk assassination, than talking about the radical left-wing agitators in Portland and Seattle, than talking about attempted murder of ICE agents. They're a joke. It should be disbanded, but it'll never be disbanded because Democrats want it to serve as an excuse to say there's this serious problem with right-wing extremism, so now we need to take all these actions. You know, we need this bias crimes hotline, and then that bias crimes hotline will inflate the numbers of hate and hate crimes, and then they'll use that to continue to justify the domestic violent extremism task force. And then you have people like Nick Brown who'll use their important work to justify what? Asking for more money. He's already in the supplemental budget this year asking for an additional $165,000 for the task force. And that might not sound like a lot, but to me, that's a lot. We shouldn't spend a penny on it. We shouldn't spend a penny on something that in a state like Washington, where the vast majority of domestic violent extremism is from the left wing, refuses to even acknowledge that left-wing extremism is happening. I mean, if they were to be taken seriously, what would they be talking about this week? They would be talking about the attacks on signature gatherers. That's domestic extremism. But they can't talk about that because they agree with it. It's insane. What do you even say about it? I just love this woman who, she's been unhinged on the meeting before, so I'm not going to give her too much credit. And she's saying, hey, you can ask questions about all this. No, she should just talk about it. And she should, you know, have a little more cojones to say, you guys, people are watching and you're ignoring these huge instances of left-wing extremism. Why? Like, somebody on the meeting have enough balls to call them out for what they're doing and not sort of try to soft step it. All right, unbelievable. Okay, coming up next in our segment Florida Report, we thought since we talked about taxes in Washington State and this new massive tax increase, we'd go to Florida and talk about their ongoing effort to cut taxes. So maybe you can plan whether it's worth moving there. First, our friend Zach Abraham, again, we heard from him earlier on how he'll avoid the death tax. Today at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time, so there's still time to sign up. He's going to have a Back to Basics live webinar. And what that means is you get on the webinar, totally free, 3:30 p.m. Pacific. They're going to do a frank discussion on the basic fundamentals of value investing. So if you're worried about your retirement portfolio, you're like, oh my God, all this chaos is happening in the world. Is my retirement portfolio properly protected against risk? He's going to sort of talk you through the basic fundamentals of what they do at Bulwark, how they try to manage and mitigate risk. He'll give you a perspective on the outlook for the remainder of 2025, plus a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So it's not too late to hear directly from Zach as he shares insights in his free Back to Basics webinar happening today, 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. Register right now, knowyourriskpodcast.com. That's knowyourriskpodcast.com. All right, taxes just went up $12.5 billion in Washington state, but in Florida, they are hard at work trying to reduce and even eliminate some taxes. Let's check in with my sister in Miami for our weekly segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hello.
I'm booking a trip to Florida for our regular end of the year break, and I am so excited to come see you. And also excited to maybe plan my future escape to Florida, because we started the show today by talking about all these new taxes that just hit on October 1st, so yesterday. And meanwhile, in Florida, your leaders are talking about ways that they can cut and or eliminate taxes.
Yeah, they had a press conference yesterday, DeSantis and the CFO of Florida, Blaise Ingolia, and just talking about where Florida's at right now, what they've done in the past few years to continuously reduce our budget. And not only reduce it, but you'll hear him talk about how they've been able to save money too. And then, you know, moving into the conversation of property tax, that's the responsibility really of local government to either raise or lower those taxes as needed. And the state is putting a lot of pressure on counties to really like hone in on their budget and make room for, you know, property tax cuts and ultimately getting rid of them in total.
Yeah, because DeSantis has said he wants that. He wants to do away with property taxes, but he says he can't do it alone. He needs cooperation and buy-in from lower level politicians. So first, I think it's great that Florida has a chief financial officer. I think it's even better that his name is Blaise. Pretty cool. But let's play a little bit from this press conference. Here's Governor Ron DeSantis on their efforts to cut spending.
The budget that we are operating under is less than the budget we operated under the year before. And that budget the year before was less than the budget the year before that. How many other states are doing that?
Not Washington, I can tell you that, although we did have on the governor of Montana, and he said that they've been making efforts every year to cut their income tax there in Montana, although we don't have an income tax, and neither do you in Florida, so that's a good thing. All right, let's hear from, so one of the other things we talked about before, they're doing this like Florida DOGE effort. And so as part of it, they're going county to county, starting with maybe the counties that have a few more red flags, and they're doing an audit. And the Blaise Ingolia, the chief financial officer, calls it their FAFO audits.
We went back to pre-COVID numbers in 2019, and we found out what the government budgets were. And then we indexed every year for inflation and population and a government inefficiency factor, and we figured out what the budgets should normally be in today. And then we compared it to what it actually is. And the numbers are absolutely astounding.
Yeah. So explain to me the point of this, because the state can come in, right? And this guy can do these audits, but ultimately counties have control over their spending. You know, cities have control over their spending. So is it just a sort of like effort to name and shame counties that are wasting money?
I mean, I think that that's part of it, which I think is totally okay. It puts a little bit of a pressure, not only pressure on the elected leaders in those counties, but also lets people know that maybe aren't paying close attention that there's a reason that your property taxes are going up, and it's not because they need your money. Mm. And I think, you know, adding that state level pressure, it's kind of like a good hierarchy to me. Like the state should be making sure that the local leaders are doing what they can, because we elect all of them. So at the end of the day, they all have promises to fulfill. And if our property taxes are going up, like that hurts people. Like people are getting taxed out of their homes that have owned their homes for years. And everybody in Florida has felt property tax increase. Even me as a renter, my rent goes up because my landlord's property tax go up. So, you know, that's one place that DeSantis has said over and over again, I want to help relieve homes by finding space to make room for property tax decreases.
Interesting that you understand as a renter that if your landlord's property taxes and costs go up, that that's passed along to you. The progressives here seem oblivious to that. So Blaze, I'm not even going to call him by his government name. I'm just going with the first name. Blaze talked about that. What you just mentioned there, this idea that, you know, they increase your taxes in some of these blue counties, for example, even in a place like Florida, and tell you they absolutely need it, and then they spend your money on trash.
All total, with just those five counties, we are almost $1 billion worth of the citizens of the state of Florida being overtaxed in just those five counties. $1 billion. Now imagine when we get to every city and every county. You can see how that number could easily be in the tens of billions of dollars. So when people start talking about property tax relief and property tax reform and getting rid of property taxes on homesteaded properties, they say you can never do it. You disagree. We vehemently disagree. You could just do that by going back to the 2019-2020 levels of government pre-COVID. It would be easy to do. So do not believe it when bureaucrats and career tax and spend politicians say that they need every dime of your money because they are just not being truthful to you.
Yeah, and he listed some things that he found that they're spending money on that are ridiculous. What are those?
Yeah, some of them are tree counters in counties. They have somebody that gets paid to go around and count trees for not really any particular reason he could find. And then
I want that job. One, two.
I would love it. That's an amazing job. But yeah, that seems a little wasteful. And then, you know, things that I think most cities spend money on for the looks of things, welcome signs that are maybe a little too flashy and we don't really need to spend that much money on them. In Orlando, he found that some city employees were getting hot yoga being paid for by the taxpayers. And he also does go on to mention that, like, it is not unique to Democrat counties. He's going after Republican-run counties, too, because there is government waste at every level of government. And he's very, you know, adamant on making sure people know that he's going for everybody. And he also talks about, and I think you guys have talked about this up there, too, you know, art, the art department, you know, and commissioning artists and poets on your tax dollars to create for you.
Yeah, so poets on the tax dollars. And in response to that, Jim, he wrote a poem of his own.
In the city of Orlando, there is a poet laureate program that uses your tax dollars to pay poets to write poems. So in an effort to save taxpayer money, we wrote a couple of them for free. Roses are red, violets are blue, our property taxes are high because of you.
That was a good one. Very short and to the point. I love that. One quick thing I want to talk about, because I railed about it in the opening of our show. Our death tax has just gone up astronomically. You know, when you die, apparently the government believes that it should get, you know, up to 35% of everything that you leave behind, which is outrageous. And so I asked you to research Florida's death tax, estate tax, just because I was kind of curious if people want to find a better place. You know, would they be able to pass along more of their assets and money if they were to, I don't know, die in Florida? What did you find out?
We do not have a death tax.
There it is. Quite simply, I think it was repealed in 2004. And yeah. Didn't they actually insert something into the Constitution saying you can't bring it back unless what?
Unless 60% of the voters decide you can bring it back.
Yeah, that's never going to happen.
It's never going to happen. And that's that we don't have an estate tax or an inheritance tax. So on either side, yeah. Unless you inherit money in a property that's making money on rent, et cetera, and income, then of course you're subject to some sort of tax. But beyond the federal estate tax, no death tax here.
It's fascinating to me, the utter stupidity of them thinking that people who have wealth are not going to leave the state and die with that wealth elsewhere. And then when they leave the state, you won't collect taxes from them on anything else. You won't collect their property tax, their sales tax. They're not paying any money to you at all. It's just such a stupid thing. And yeah, I think Mike and I will probably find some way to retire or die in the free state of Florida. All right, Miranda, thank you so much. Good stuff.
You're welcome.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
All right, we'll get to our daily subscriber show poll coming up next. I wanted to gauge whether your opinions have changed on the idea of sending National Guard troops into Portland. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, now is a great time of year to reach out to our friend Wes Jones. Did you hear that? Talking too fast, I'm forgetting to breathe. Of sellwithwes.com. Nicole just told me going to Florida for it. I feel like you need to breathe because I was talking so fast. Wow. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. Wes has been doing this for a really long time. He survived all the ups and downs in the market, and there's a reason why. He's just really good at what he does. His communication is top-notch. Their marketing material is fantastic. It's going to make your home stand out amongst all the other listings, and that's what you need to get more feet in the door, more offers on the table. So reach out to Wes, ask him about doing a free market analysis to kind of give you a sense of how the market is doing in your neighborhood, and then ask him about his Listing Boost concierge service, where they're going to come in, handle all the hard, stressful work of making sure that your home is ready to sell, even if that means cosmetic upgrades, etc. And he can even make sure you don't have to pay for those until closing, which takes the financial pressure off of you as well. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It simply is a better way to sell your home. Daily subscriber show poll. So I told you guys that I was going to repeat this poll as sort of a gauge of whether you have a changing sentiment around the president sending in National Guard troops into Portland. So the question I asked earlier this week and that I repeated today, do you support President Trump deploying National Guard soldiers to Portland to protect the ICE facility? Of course, after the first time I asked, I've since been to Portland. We aired our special report, 48 Hours in Portland, which you can watch across all of our platforms if you'd like to do that. I haven't done it already. So, Nicole, has your sentiment changed? Because you said yes, absolutely. Yeah. And you still feel the same way.
I still feel the same way. I think it's even worse. I feel even more confident in that.
I think
something has to be done.
My answer was kind of a no earlier this week, only because I felt like DHS agents could probably handle it sufficiently without actually bringing in the National Guard. But seeing the extent to which in the last 24 hours, Portland PD has completely abdicated any responsibility in that area. And even when presented with a person they should arrest, let them just walk away. Gosh, I tend to kind of lean towards yes now, just out of the principle of the matter.
And to motivate, right? Maybe it'll motivate some action
on
behalf of them. I don't know.
I think they want Trump to send the troops in because it gives them fuel to continue this sort of fascist dictator narrative. So you guys have also not changed your minds, although on Locals, fewer of you are saying yes than did earlier in the week. Spark of Pierre says, various degrees of bloviation coming from both sides, but I'll choose unwelcome law enforcement over organized anarchy and needless assault and death as a norm, so long as laws and their enforcement reflect the innate inclusion and fairness that America should and may yet again stand for. B. Clother says, yes, but tone down the war talk. I would only support them coming to defend federal property at this time. I agree with the war talk. I get it. Hyperbole. I engage in hyperbole often. But I'm also not the president of the United States. Matthew Cook, Portland and Oregon leadership has made it very clear they have no interest in holding those interfering with ICE enforcing the law. And to what extent is our and this is my other thing that has sort of softened me to the idea of a National Guard deployment. These DHS federal agents have actual jobs to do, but instead, every night, they're having to deal with these rioters. So I want them focused on doing their actual jobs and immigration enforcement and going out and serving these high-risk warrants and arrests. And so, yeah, at this point, you know, 100-plus days in, maybe it's time to hand the job off to someone else. And Portland police certainly don't want it. Jeannie Carlson, as I've said before, the governor of Oregon, the mayor of Portland, and all other so-called leadership would allow the local police, if they would allow the local police forces to effectively do their jobs, the feds wouldn't be needed. The feds have every right to protect government assets and facilities. Clean your shit up, Portland, or the feds will do it for you. Bring on the guard, she says. Yes. Let's do one more here. Cheryl Millman. I just wish he had been clearer about what he was really doing. I think you mean President Donald Trump. Yeah, and maybe just in that initial tweet, because it kind of made it sound like he was sending them more broadly to Portland, although he mentioned, you know, Antifa and ICE facilities. So I think just a clear delineation of here's what they will be doing, here's what they will not be doing. Less hyperbole, more information is always probably better. All right, let's get to
even
some-
though it really wouldn't matter. They'd get
mad. No, no. Oh, 100%.
Way.
They would go unhinged no matter what.
Doesn't matter.
That's what they did in LA. He had a clear, you know, the National Guard was clearly there around federal mm-hmm. facilities, and it didn't matter. They're unhinged about it yep. regardless.
I had somebody tell me that. I just wish he would be careful with his words and he'd be different. And I was like, it wouldn't matter. He literally, I saw people posting that their kids are talking after they took the you know, drug for autism that's helping kids that are nonverbal mm-hmm. start to speak. And that's been working apparently yep. this week, or some kids are showing progress. And still, he's the devil for even mentioning
oh,
yeah. it.
No, kids have a right to be autistic. Yeah. It's like, okay, all right. Oh, okay, on our signature gathering event, and Nicole, can you scrounge up that mm-hmm. graphic again while I'm reading these comments? Signature gathering event and a rally. This is to show strength and resistance to the resistance this Saturday in Tumwater. So please make time to be there at noon at Tumwater Middle School. Eric Bath says, what about grandparents for their granddaughters? Hell yes, grandparents there. And even if you're not a parent, I'm not a parent, but I'm going to be there. So I'm just, in my head, I'm picturing a bunch of dads showing strength and solidarity for our teenage daughters who need it. Like, arm in arm, baby.
Like Red Rover, Red Rover.
Yes. Like, please, Antifa, I wish you would. Yeah. Although we're going to go there and obviously be peaceful and nonviolent, because that is what we do. Because we are normal, rational, thinking human beings who would not call 911 because we saw someone with signs we disagreed with. Baron of Gray Matter, can we offer fair trade fist to face counseling? It will be organic, I promise. No fist to face counseling. None of that. I will shun you from the group and you will be forced to leave. Chris Walker, get the local bikers involved. It depends which ones, honestly. Depends which ones. Av Geek Joe, it's time for a wall of dads, big brothers, and good men. I agree. Hello, Watermelon. Build the dad wall. Yes, we need a dad wall. So if any of these young girls want to show up and gather signatures and tell their stories, they can do so without fear of unhinged lunatics assaulting them. Papa Woody, although I am not responsible for my conduct if I see a teenage girl assaulted. After that, take me to prison, because that's probably where mm-hmm. I'll go. Papa Woody, one more $5 super chat there. How long till Bob finds you when you move out of state? Yes. A fine if they're going to tax you for moving out of state. I'm sure they already have something on that. Like, they don't think they probably tax U-Hauls well, more or something.
Well, selling.
You, yes. Right. You right your assets.
House, like, yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
Shannon Hutton, I can't wrap my head around how people are more mad about tariffs than these high taxes in our state. I bring it up to people all the time and they can never say anything back to me. And that's a good point I didn't bring up in the Seattle Times editorial. This year, they're going to be facing real crises. We're already facing real crises. Trump's maybe $2 billion impact on tariffs that hasn't mm-hmm. even manifested, that's not a real crisis. Like the homeless complex, the drugs, the crime, the overtaxation, these are real crises. All the bridges that are out of service, these are the real crises. So also, Seattle Times loses its mind. Let me see here. Angela Trash. Angela Powley, this seems like a saving penalty. Is this a way to get rid of the elderly or extremely ill in this state without outright saying it?
So I've heard, you know, conspiracy theories about that. It's a way to kind of get rid of who you don't want here and sell the land to people that you do kind of want here. And yeah, it kind of scares off, you know, if they leave, fine. That's not who they want here anyway.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, maybe... Yeah. If you were trying to scare conservatives out of a state, they are doing everything that uh-huh. would be required to do so. I understand that, Angela. Mm-hmm. Nathan, insane that government can just make up new taxes. There should be an auditing process first. That'll never happen. Ed Board pushing back against the sales tax, the Seattle Times Ed Board. DC's bees, it would not surprise me if this big tax push flips stuff in Washington. Wallets are going to feel it hard. No, because they blame Trump. They'll say it's the tariffs, it's all these things, orange man bad, and people just eat it up, and the media doesn't tell the truth. Mm-hmm. I mean, remember we did that King 5 story last week when they featured a business that said they were surprised and taken off guard, caught off guard by the new taxes. It's like, well, that's because you're watching King 5 news. You know, you need to watch a news outlet that's keeping you up to date and is assigning blame. News outlets should assign blame where blame is due. You don't have to act neutral. It's just the Democrats who are raising taxes. It's not the Republicans. Let's see here. On the extremism task force not being able to define extremism, Moon Goddess, blame victims and the bad orange man. It's their fault. Yeah, in the case of ICE agents, apparently it's their fault they're getting shot at. Patty Soans, so they're going to waste millions of dollars trying to define extremism and then not defining it. Correct.
That whole meeting, I suffered through the whole thing. And God, I mean, by you. The end of it, the only thing that they did was add more rules to the way that they discuss things during the meeting.
Yeah, that's, I mean, they'll spend time, pronouns, all these things, and then not getting anything done. It's such a waste of money. Let's see here. On Florida Report, the effort to cut taxes in Florida, Mo Sterling, we should have an independent nonpartisan committee to recalibrate our budget in Washington. Yeah, wouldn't that be nice? Jason M., holy sheet, every state should have this evaluation, like what's happening, these FAFO audits in Florida. Chuck Heller, what kind of witchcraft is happening in Florida? It's almost like, wait for it, common sense. Yes, it is.
That is witchcraft.
Witchcraft. Let's see. Let's do one more super chat here from Matt Gilbert. In honor of Dory's heavenly birthday, I'm making a donation in his name to the Human Fund. Human Fund. Hashtag money for people. Is Dory's birthday today?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. Miss Dory. Yeah.
Crazy.
Just sad. It's one of the last times I saw him was for his birthday. We all went out to Snoqualmie Casino and had dinner at the steakhouse. Yeah. I don't know if I've told this story, but Dory, you know, it's his birthday. And I think he wanted to go out and like maybe gamble, like do the sports book or something.
The sports book, yeah.
So he's going out to Snoqualmie Casino. Mike and I live out that way. And we're all like, okay, let's go and we'll take Dory to dinner for his birthday. Mm-hmm. This is his last birthday before he passed away. And all of a sudden we get there and Dory's like, oh, let's, you know, go to the buffet. And I'm thinking, the buffet? Like, that's fine in certain circumstances, but it's your birthday. It's the evening, you know? I said, let's go to the steakhouse. But the reason he knew that I was going to offer to pay for dinner because it's his birthday. Mm-hmm. And he didn't want to make us pay for the steakhouse. Mm-hmm. So we thought we'd all go to the buffet. And I was like, no, we're going to the steakhouse. Yeah. And you can get whatever you want. And then he sent me this nice card. Mm-hmm. He wrote me a little card. I think Suzanne always used to tell him to write cards. Little thank you card. For paying for his birthday dinner.
Very sweet.
And I have it hanging up on my wall. But anyway, yeah. He wanted to go to the buffet because he didn't want Mike and I to pay for his birthday dinner. So very funny.
That was a fun night, though.
Yeah, that was a good night. Good memory.
I mean, still not good at craps. I tried. He tried so many times to teach us how craps to be better.
Craps is too confusing for
me. It's too hard.
Stick to the blackjack. All right. We'll get to our closing sanity check next. First, I encourage you guys to take the First Mark Challenge. See if you can save your family a little bit of money on insurance, especially in light of all the new taxes. You got to look for savings anywhere you can get it. And it's possible that you're paying too much for the insurance that you have, or you're paying for insurance that you don't even need. That's the case for a lot of people, is they find this insurance, you know, they go through the little tools online or whatever, and it spits out what the best plan for them is. And sometimes it ends up including a bundle of things you don't even need. So reach out to First Mark, take the First Mark Challenge. It's super simple, totally free. You never pay First Mark anything for their services. They will go out and find the best insurance for you and your family. They will make sure that that insurance is at the best price. And then they will proactively every single year be checking in, going out, making sure that you have the insurance you need and it's at the best rate possible. So it's just really, it takes so much stress out of the whole insurance process and can save you thousands of dollars a year. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com to schedule the First Mark Challenge, and you could be our next First Mark Insurance success story. FirstMarkInsurance.com, the very best part is they work for you. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. So we wanted to play this. I was actually in Portland when this happened, but I was caught on the other side of the crowd. And so I didn't get to see and hear the chaos. But we're in this crowd outside the Portland ICE facility, and they've taken over the streets. This is Sunday afternoon. And all of a sudden, this Tesla tries to turn right in the middle of the crowd, which was dumb. I'm like, why are you trying to drive through here? What a horrible idea. So all of a sudden, this like middle-aged woman is stuck in her Tesla. And what happens? Of course, the crowd, mob mentality, instantly mob her Tesla. There's Portland police standing feet away. They don't do anything about it. And if you've never been in a car that's being mobbed, it's a very scary situation. So here is a clip from another streamer that was down there that got a better shot.
This lady's trying to get through the streets. We're not letting her through. They're not letting her through.
That's personal privilege right there, baby.
This lady right here is saying it's illegal.
illegal for her to be coming through here. The police are stepping in.
Literal terrorists. Literal terrorists.
Oh my God, it's so bad. Oh, you won't be able to get
She hit a pedestrian. If you do not arrest this woman, you are complicit with this fucking administration.
Who controls the street?
Right, you have the police going. You have these guys mad at me for filming this. This lady's crying. Somebody stamped the car with Trump Gestapo. Not welcome. Now this lady's trying to get out. What's your message to these protesters, ma'am?
Get a job.
Gosh, amen. Get a job. That has been our closing sanity check. A reminder, we need you on Saturday. All this stuff that's been happening, we cannot let it go unanswered. The activists will be there. The left-wing cuckoo lunatics will be there. Antifa will be there. Trantifa will be there. The question is, will you be there to support parental rights and to support young women who have every right to play against people of their own sex? So, join us, Tumwater Middle School, this Saturday, 12 p.m. to 1 p.m., 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. Be there or be square and shunned from undivided forever. No, I'm kidding. I still love you guys no matter what, but we need a wall of dads. That's the goal. Wall of dads. Nicole's not going to be there, so she's shunned from undivided forever. It's all right. She had a pre-existing engagement.
And you know, the important thing is signing. So,
Well, yes. The important thing is being there.
Just make sure you find one to sign.
No, don't give them excuses. They will be there. They will be there this Saturday, Tumwater Middle School, 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. And thank you for supporting this show. You know, we rely on that support from subscribers to do things like going down to Portland to cover what's happening down there. And so putting that stuff together can be quite expensive. And so we appreciate our subscribers paying $5 a month to support that content. We love doing that kind of work in addition to the live show. So UndividedPod.com on Sundays with subscribers this week. We're talking to some victims of domestic violent extremism. Since we're able and capable of defining it, so we found some victims of it. We're going to talk to them for Sunday's show since it's such an apt subject this week. UndividedPod.com to become a subscriber. Click on the banner that says support the show for $5. And make sure you share, watch it, but also share our special report. 48 hours in Portland. Did you know you can share posts from Patreon and Locals? Yes, you can. Share it to your friends. It brings more people back to our Patreon and Locals pages. We love that. See subscriber Sunday, the rest of you Monday at noon.